Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, you're fresh back from vacation, ready for some training camps. How's it going?
It's going well. Yeah, every year we go to Deer Valley YMCA camp. I've been doing it since I was like 7 years old. There's no internet, basically. There's no cell. It's just a bunch of cabins in the woods, family camp. It's wonderful, and it's always that week of the year. And the second I get home, it's like, boom. It's like the divider of my life where there's nothing going on in the NFL. And as soon as I get home, I feel like I'm behind and full go NFL. I'll be up at Steeler camp in a couple days. You know, things are booming. It's great. We got a great guest today, too. I'm pretty psyched.
We do. We do. Matt, I guess it's been almost 3 months ago now. As soon as the NFL draft ended, you and I had a show that we, revealed our rookie rankings. Now that we had learned the landing spots and the draft capital for each of these teams. And we're going to revisit that today. We're going to talk about our top 10 rookie ranks, and we've got the perfect guest to do that with, Mr. Matt Waldman from Football Guys. And he's, of course, also the author of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. You can hear him on the Audible with Sigmund Bloom and some of the other guys over there. Matt, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm glad to be back with you guys. This is a great show, and it's always fun to talk Dynasty, especially rookies.
So, like I said, we are going to talk about those top 10 rookie rankings. We're all going to share those and what our ranks look like right now. But before we do that, I want to dig in a little bit to that RSP. And I love it because not only do you release that, I think usually around April 1st, I believe, and that's kind of the beginning of the rookie fever for all of us Dynasty players. And that's just feeding that. But then after the draft, you release that update with even more information. And of course, some of those player values and things change based on landing spots, like I said, based on draft capital. If a player, maybe we expected a player to be a late third day and he's an early second day pick, that can really change some things. So let's talk about a few of those things. In the RSP post-draft version, you mentioned that you're using a 2 to 3 year window to rank these players specifically with dynasty leagues in mind. Is that how you also build your teams with that 2 or 3 year window, or is it adjusted somewhat?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that how I prescribe what I do and what I've been doing lately is probably a little different. And that's because I think a lot of that has to do with that probably in the past 5 to 7 years, I've spent a lot of time experimenting with the teams that I've had. I take wild risks, and you know, Ryan, because you've seen, and Matt as well, we're in a league together, and I tend to take wilder risks with my teams over the past 5 to 7 years, just because, one, I'm playing with a bunch of guys of the quality that you guys are that are just great players. And I find that I'm looking for more like home run cuts and things to take chances on. And second, it's just worthwhile as a writer to be able to explore kind of the edges of things and see how that works out, or see what, you know, and talk about what I'm doing from that standpoint. But if I were back in normal mode, and I hope to get back there someday soon, I will probably take fewer risks. And I would say 2 to 3 windows is generally the norm of what I look for. I've just been kind of playing outside that, because I think that we look at the average NFL career and also just kind of the turnover with teams and with contracts, and 2 to 3 years seems to be a safe range for me as a way to at least prescribe, you know, an outlook from there. Even though I love with the pre-draft RSP that I try and just look at talent overall, devoid of depth chart position. So I also kind of say to dynasty players, it's like, if you're just looking at talent, you may just want to look at the pre-draft, because that's probably my truest assessment. But the filter of, you know, 2 to 3 years is, you know, and refining it for that, that's where I go in with the post-draft.
One thing that I guess when I'm doing my rankings, and sometimes I find myself getting caught up with everything else that I've seen, and that includes your work, of course, and the rookie rankings and of other folks that I read around the industry. I guess sometimes I find myself giving up my own evaluation for the sake of the consensus. And that's certainly one thing we can say that that is a strength of yours. You don't do that. Some of your rankings are, you know, outside of the box in a good way. So how do you transfer that when you're making these picks in rookie dynasty leagues? And we're going to talk about some of the players that I call outliers in your rankings. You've got them higher than most other, maybe any other dynasty player would have them ranked. But when it comes to the end of the first round, are you taking a shot on your guy, even though that might seem like a reach, or do you know you can get him a little bit later? How do you formulate that plan?
Yeah, one of the things that I do, and I do this also for readers in the post draft, is I create a cheat sheet and I look at ADP from leagues during that time. And then I give them a format so that they can actually add to that if they want to and figure out an updated version of this as well. But I look at the ADP, I weigh that versus my ranking and show how many picks they are over or under versus my ranking. So that gives you kind of an idea of define where the sweet spot is to pick that player. So for instance, you know, one of my outliers that we're going to talk about is Josh Reynolds, wide receiver out of Texas A&M with the Rams. You know, I had him ranked high enough that my post-draft ranking versus where he was being picked in April and May was, or in May actually was, he was in my rankings, he was basically underrated by almost 22 picks. So that meant that, you know, I may have him ranked 14th on my board post-draft and had him ranked even higher pre-draft. I know that means, you know, if I pick him 14th, I'm giving up almost 22 picks in value in May. So I kind of look at it from that standpoint. I look at the average ADP. You can find that at some wonderful sites around the internet, including DLF. And then you can just, you know, look at that versus my RSP ranking. And with the formula that I give, you can determine where that sweet spot is for you. And that's what I tend to do.
That is pretty awesome, and I check it out every year. Matt, I just wanted to ask you too, kind of going back a step, is there a position more than others that landing spot really affects you? You know, like from what I recall, I think you really liked Brett Hundley coming out of school, but going behind Aaron Rodgers is a killer.
Right. And I think quarterback is really that position is probably
is that the only, yeah.
That's probably one of the toughest ones because running back, we know that the injury rate seems to be pretty high. Wide receiver, there's a fair bit of turnover and they feel enough interchangeability that unless you're a Julio Jones or franchise type of player, you know, guys who eventually start to look good and are about time to earn that second contract, teams are often like, well, we feel like we've got a talented guy below him that we can deal with as our wide receiver two or wide receiver three, and we'll let him move on. You know, Marvin Jones is a good example of that, you know, where he flashed enough with the Bengals, but they felt like, you know, we can lose him. And then another team picks him, says, you know, like the Lions. And before he got hurt, I think they were feeling like he could be their primary guy, or at least a really good co-wide receiver too, in the sense with Golden Tate. So yeah, for me, running back, wide receiver, tight end doesn't seem to change too much for me in terms of that, because I expecting the turnover from injury or just the way contracts play out. With quarterback, it really is, because there's so much involved with leadership, with coaching staff, with scheme, and their development track and how they do on the stage. There's so many factors with them. It's such a difficult position that landing spot really does matter.
Matt, we're going to talk about some players, but as soon as I mentioned Hundley, a little bell went off in my head going, I'm pretty sure Matt was really high on Cardale Jones too. He just got traded last week. I mean, it seemed like Buffalo would be a good spot, and you know, how long is Tyrod Taylor going to be around? But I think they're looking for different aspects when they drafted Peterson, and now they have different coaching staff. And then all of a sudden you look, well, maybe he's Rivers' successor. I'm just curious what you think about that whole Jones situation right now.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, because the fact that the Bills, you know, Bills Anthony Lynn, former Bills Anthony Lynn, now is in San Diego, that they decided to get Cardale, that tells you that there was at least one fan in Bills camp still to take a chance on him and see what they get, right? You know, and we don't know behind the scenes, or, you know, we can only guess behind the scenes what's going on. Is Cardale, his work ethic strong? Was it, you know, or not strong enough for Buffalo's liking? Was it that, you know, it was just a new regime and, you know, the new regime was just like, look, he's just not our guy. Not really what we're looking for here. They, you know, the fact that they put Tyrod Taylor on notice kind of early, just saying, hey, look, he's got to earn this job. And some of that may be camp talk or spring talk, but still, I think that it, the kind of writing was on the wall that, that this team didn't feel all that great about it. And I think that with San Diego or Los Angeles, now the Chargers, you've got a guy in Rivers who has kind of, you know, he's a coach's son. He has a coach's mentality in a lot of respects. He knows he's near the end of his career. And, you know, maybe he plays another 3-4 years if Father Time is really kind to him. But, you know, I think he can look at this and see realistically that he can help out a young player with a big arm and flash in some talent that just has to get better at processing the game and showing some leadership. And, you know, some of that, some of those emotional intelligence issues are left to be seen, because that's a big aspect of quarterbacking to me. And we'll see whether or not he has that on the level to play in the NFL as a starter.
Matt, another part of the RSP post draft is you identifying some landing spots you liked, landing spots you didn't like for these incoming rookies. And one player that's been talked about a lot, and most people seem to think this was not a good landing spot, but you had him both high on your list as well as identifying Christian McCaffrey with the Panthers as a positive landing spot. So what are you seeing there that maybe is different than so many others who just maybe quickly assume that's not a good landing spot for him?
Sure. And let me just add, Matt asked me that question about Cardale, and I don't feel like I really answered how I feel about it, I guess, as well as I should have, which is I would say this: if you own Cardale Jones, hold on to him. If you don't, I would say, unless he's just, you know, unless you're in a deep roster league, take him as a, you know, take him as a flyer, but I wouldn't go overboard to trade for him at this stage. That's kind of how I look at it. Cautious optimism.
You wouldn't be shocked if the Chargers used an early pick on a quarterback next year either, though, right?
Not at all. Not at right, all. This is a total flyer on a guy who we know has talent, but there's a lot more to it than just a big arm and the ability to run and hang in the pocket and take some hits. So, yeah, with McCaffrey, you know, to me, it's like this. It's, you know, people are saying, well, Jonathan Stewart's going to get the same carries he got before. Well, you know, to at least to begin this year, Stewart's still on the older stages of his career. We love his athletic ability. We've never been in love with his injury history. And when you look at the number of carries he only had 8 receptions last year. You know, when I look at this, there's 2 gates to entry for Christian McCaffrey to have a nice career here. One is that, yeah, the Carolina Panthers don't have a great offensive line, but Christian McCaffrey is such a good runner conceptually, I believe, in terms of his ability to access creases, create creases for himself, to create when there's penetration behind the line of scrimmage, that he's a player that I think can make up for some of the deficiencies of an offensive line, some of them, and the fact that he's so good in space that they can use him, you know, as a slot guy, put him out wide occasionally, do things with him from the backfield as a receiver. I see him as a Brian Westbrook type of player, even though I know Westbrook himself was like, no, he's not me, you know, and he kind of, you know, didn't particularly like that comparison very much when people were talking about it. But I think that McCaffrey has enough skill in the tank there that he can be used at least in that role. And I was a big Westbrook fan. So, it, you know, I think of this as the gate to entry, you know, long-term is good for him, because I think at worst he's what Giovanni Bernard offers the Bengals at his best, which was a high-end running back too. And I think that that's at worst for McCaffrey. At best, if Stewart goes down, I just don't believe Fozzie Whitaker is going to get all of those 226 carries and 8 receptions that Stewart got last year. And even when you look at, you know, maybe what type of touches that McCaffrey can get, I'd say conservatively, he gets, you know, 8 to 12 a game, 8 to 12 touches a game. If that's conservative, that's still enough that he can earn those Bernard-like, you know, running back 2, high-end running back 3 production right out the gate. And I think that he will continue to develop as a player, and they're going to build around him enough, I would hope, to get more along the offensive line. And if they don't, I still think, you know, that if your downside is that, and you're in a PPR league where you're going to be frequently targeted as a receiver, and he is a smart receiver as a running back out of the backfield, and you look at this team with its receiving options, I just feel like that he's a very safe pick.
Matt, I think that's extremely well said, and I love it from a real-life NFL perspective and from a Panthers fan. I'm psyched that they added McCaffrey. Clearly, they have a big role in mind for him. They use that early of a pick. But for fantasy and dynasty, here are my concerns. A minor one is Cam going to change his stripes and take the easy dump-offs, you know, or is he going to drive the ball downfield again and again? I mean, I just don't know that he's going to be Drew Brees in that respect. Secondly, and this is probably the biggest one, with Newton, Stewart for now, big receivers in the red zone, I just don't see many touchdowns in McCaffrey's career, or especially in the short term. And if so, they're going to probably have to be long ones. You know, that it's just, that's an unfortunate thing about fantasy is if you don't score a lot of touchdowns, you don't score a lot of points. And he might be a great player, but end up with 5 touchdowns every year. And lastly, I still think the persona of that team is let's be big and physical. And when Stewart's day is gone, it wouldn't shock me that in 2019, they used a second round pick on a 240-pound back.
And those are great points. And it's a terrific counterpoint to add there with him, because especially in the passing game part with Cam Newton, and can he do that? Can he dump off a little bit more? I would say that the other component of that might be, do we have a guy in McCaffrey who, like Westbrook, can run those seam routes and run those deeper crossing routes where he suddenly becomes that bigger play option, and it's a little bit more frequent to the effect that, you know, you can count on that a little bit more often than you might the average back who's seen as just as a heavy outlet option. So for me, I think that, you know, I don't think I have a complete answer to combat some of those negatives and say, no, I can't, you know, and just completely dismiss them, because I think your points are good. But I would say that the down the seam, it looks like that's a pretty good thing. The fact that they've changed they've gone back in terms of switching general managers, you know, you wonder if the coaching staff will be next. If that's next, does that change the mentality in terms of what they want to do with this team? And if they see enough McCaffrey, I still think from a 2 to 3 year window standpoint, he still offers a lot PPR yardage, total yardage. And from a touchdown perspective, yeah, that may be his weakness, is that you may never see him get double digit touchdowns, but I don't see him as being that guy who ends up with less than 5. And I know that that's a fear, and it's a legit fear, but I think he's a 5 to 7 touchdown guy with high yardage and high PPR. And that's enough that I feel pretty safe about him.
The last note of McCaffrey to make before we move on, though, is that I also wouldn't be shocked. I think right now he's their best slot receiver on the team before he even arrived. That we see 11 personnel with Funchess, Benjamin, McCaffrey really is just a wide receiver, and Stewart on the field. So I think he's going to be on the field a lot.
Yeah, and that could happen. And I think also, well, are they going to run more end arounds or ghosts to him out of the slot? Or if they don't, then yeah, that's the downside, is that he may not get those touches from that end of the spectrum. But, you know, this year for sure. Next year, can we get Curtis Samuel to you know, develop in a level that it's faster than what Braxton Miller did? And then you can see him on the field and be effective in more maybe a Randall Cobb-like a role. Maybe. You know, but the thing for me, I think, with McCaffrey is I still have confidence in him as a between the tackles runner enough that I don't think he's going to get Duke Johnsoned in terms of the way that what the Browns are trying to do with him right now, or Theo Riddick.
Okay, I got one more question. I'm sorry, Ryan. You mentioned Samuel. Do you think Samuel's going to be more Ted Ginn for them, or is he going to be more Harvin Cobb type guy?
You know, to me, the speed factor, you can see how he'd be more Ginn. And I think the fact that you ask that question leads to your knowledge of probably when you look at the Panthers and you think about how they are and philosophically how they are.
Right.
There's a really good opportunity for them to begin. And maybe my my thoughts were, when I look at his ability, I was hoping that they would have the sense to try and use him more as Cobb Harvin. But, you know, early on, if he's not a, I think that really comes down to training camp now, how we see he's being used and how fast he adjusts to pre-snap, post-snap types of things he has to do within the scheme. And if he's kind of slower to do that, I would think that they'd say, well, let's use him more in a gim role where we know what he can do. Let him lean on his athletic ability early on and make fewer types of adjustments. And if he's really picking things up fast, then maybe they feel like they can then expand the library of what he does. And then that the upside would be he veers more into that Cobb Harvin type of role.
Matt, one player that you pegged as maybe a poor landing spot was Taywan Taylor of the Titans. Obviously, they also added Corey Davis prior to drafting Taylor, and since the draft, they have signed Eric Decker as well. So, is it just competition that causes you to see that as a bad landing spot for Taywan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really more what it is that how likely is Marcus Mariota going to support, you know, more than two fantasy starters in the passing game? And I think that when you look at their scheme, I don't think Delanie Walker's going anywhere. I think they use him through scheming in ways that are creative. They like to move him around. Maybe they moved him around because they didn't feel comfortable with their receivers, but I don't think that's it. I think it's just that he's a nice matchup problem to have where you use him as a tight end, then you end up splitting him out in the slot or splitting him wide, doing some of the things that you do with end arounds with him or fake end arounds. And then letting Mariota run with the ball on designed plays where he's really good as a runner on designed plays. And I think that that's something that when they can use Walker in conjunction with all of that, that's a positive. What they haven't had is really a strong outside receiver who can, you know, give you the full route tree, make plays on 50-50 balls, and win deep on certain looks, you know, in terms of being able to beat press coverage and do that type of thing all in one. And I think Davis provides that. I think Taywan Taylor maybe can grow into a player closer to that, but I still feel like that he was more of a deep threat who could run after the catch, who could catch short passes, who could catch deep passes. But as a route runner overall, I wasn't as impressed with his overall route tree at this stage. I felt it would take him a little bit more time. And when you already have Rishard Matthews in there, who was playing well as a big slot guy, and you put Davis in there ahead and you have Walker, I just thought that was right there was enough that Taylor seemed to me a longer term project right out the gate where you're looking at maybe year three, year four, and then wondering if he's going to be that wide receiver too, despite the fact that he's make some really flashy plays. Then you add Decker into the equation. And I know maybe he's down at the downside of his career, or we're predicting that, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years, but he's still a solid route runner who's played with some of the better with some good quarterbacks in the league. And he's someone who understands the game well enough that, you know, you can put him in the slot, you can put him outside. He runs a decent route tree. He makes some tough plays, and he's instant production, I think, if he's healthy enough right out the gate. And they're already talking about putting him in the slot. So for me, yeah, it just didn't feel like a good landing spot before Decker got added. Now afterwards, it just kind of validates that for me even more.
Hey, guys, I want to tell everyone about a new sponsor we have, Harry's. And I have some personal experience with them. Pretty much my whole life, I've been an electric razor guy. And unlike our guest, I shave every day, keep a nice clean shave. I don't even know what a beard would look like on me. I'm sure it would not look as good as on the wild man here. But then Harry sent me some blades, and I gave it a shot, and I'm hooked, man. They're awesome. So just for our listeners, Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you your trowel shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/dynasty, and all you got to pay for is shipping, which is very cheap. Harry's is all about great shave at a fair price. 3 million guys, including myself, not Matt Waldman, I don't think, have switched to Harry's, at least yet. Two ordinary dudes, Jeff and Andy, they were just fed up with buying these overpriced razors. You know, you go to the pharmacy or whatever, and they're behind the glass, and they're super expensive. So they started Harry's to totally fix the shaving. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blades-making experience to ensure the highest quality, and all products are backed by 100% guarantee. So it's really good stuff. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free. All you got to do is cover shipping, which, again, is very, very cheap. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergodynamic razor handle, 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, which I like quite a bit, and a travel blade cover. So get your free trial set. Go to harrys.com/dynasty. That's harrys.com/dynasty.
Matt, let's talk about a couple of players that you have listed as overrated or underrated. And again, I think you're probably using that ADP that you pulled from some of the other sites that you mentioned earlier. Overrated, Jeremy McNichols, the running back for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I've never, you know, I look at McNichols and I can see he's got the body type and the style to be a good zone runner. But when I look at how he played, he wasn't conceptually as strong of a zone runner as he was a gap runner, at least from the viewings I saw. So I felt like he's going to need a little work on that to be well-rounded in each blocking scheme that tends to be prevalent in terms of the plays that are run in the NFL. I felt like that he didn't play to his size in terms of his, you know, in terms of his weight. I felt like he didn't bounce off as many hits as I'd like to see. I didn't think he got, while he can get yards after contact on a functional level, I didn't think it was extra special. I didn't think he played to his speed overall, even though he had really nice metrics with some of his, you know, speed and quickness times at workouts, combine, things like that. I just didn't think that conceptually, because he wasn't as conceptually strong as I liked in decision making, he didn't play to the speed that you wanted to see from him. And so I think there's a number of things that he needed to work on. And now you see him land in Tampa Bay, and I'm a Doug Martin fan. I know that, you know, Doug Martin's been tremendously up and down for people for a variety of reasons that are concerning. Some of them have injury. The recent one is the Adderall abuse. And you have Jason Licht, the GM, basically saying his job's not guaranteed even when he comes back this year. And I'm thinking maybe I'm, you know, creating a narrative that doesn't exist, but just from kind of my experience of managing people in the past life, that's kind of my thought of going, this is one of my best talents, and he's basically hurt us multiple times because of his behavior, but he's still one of our best talents on our team. What am I going to say to him? You know, I've got to say, basically, look, this is it. This is it for you. I know we signed a contract last year in June for, what, 4 years, 5 years? Big money, you know, to keep him in there for pretty much the length of his prime. And then he goes out and does this. So, of course, you're going to be concerned and you're going to say that. But I think that's basically putting him on notice, saying we'll take extreme measures if we have to, even though we've signed you. We'll do something to get rid of you if you're not doing what you need to do. We're going to watch you. And, you know, everything's been cordial and nice in terms of how Martin's talked about it in the media. He says he understands. Everyone's raving about him in camp. But, you know, that's the scenario. And when they talk about McNichols in that context, it's always, we've got Jaquizz Rodgers, who Dirk Koetter has always liked. Dirk Koetter stood on the table for Martin for them not to leave, for him not to be jettisoned when Koetter came to Tampa Bay. So, you know, those two are 1-2 in some fashion. You still got Sims hanging around. They even talked about Peyton Barber and how they like his power for his size and how he runs. And then they're like, and we still have to get Jeremy McNichols in there to see what we've got. So when the phrase is to see what we've got in relation to him after they mentioned four other guys, to me, again, it just validates that he may ascend very quickly, because look, the Browns didn't know what they had in Isaiah Crowell until Deion Lewis went down in the third preseason game 3-4 years ago now. And Crowell went off and they're like, you know, let's go ahead and see. They like what they have on film, but they know that, you know, pass protection, decision-making as a running back, all those types of things, how tough he's going to run at this level. Those are things that they're going to find out a little bit more in the preseason. And I just think that he's probably 2-3 years away to me from relevancy unless injuries hit.
Your Martin point's a good one. And yeah, it's kind of what they have to say, you know, that it's not, your job's not yours, but if he's close to being right, who's going to beat him out?
Yeah. He's to me, he's a top 5 running back in ability. I mean, we've seen that twice. the 2 years that he started all 16 games and he was healthy, he was the number three fantasy running back. And he's, and you know, he's had over 40 catches as a rookie. You know that he can, he's an all around good player when the offensive line is decent enough. And I, and I'm hopeful, you know, that's the if with the Bengals, but I feel like they've gotten some young talent. They've gotten some rapport and some continuity, and continuity always helps. And, you know, Matt does a great job. He wrote a great article about offensive alignment improvement at Football Guys recently that I've enjoyed reading and seeing his work. If you get a chance to catch it there, it's terrific. And, you know, I think that you look at the red zone opportunities that Martin may have even this year because of the fact that they have a, you know, revamp their receiving core a little bit. They don't just have Mike Evans now. You've got DeSean Jackson. When he's healthy, he's excellent as a deep threat, and that's going to help out with Winston, who made Rashad Green, who's a, you know, a slot receiver for the Jaguars, trying to hang on to a job, look like a good deep threat in the college game. So that O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, you know, you've got enough weapons there that suddenly teams aren't like, oh, they're going to hand it to Doug Martin inside the five all the time.
Matt, one player you have listed as underrated is Green Bay rookie running back Jamal Williams. And I know in your overall list as well, he's fairly high. What do you like about him? And do you think there's any chance he can beat out Ty Montgomery?
I think there's a chance, but the chance would have to be that Montgomery falls on his face as a pass protector again this year and makes mistakes that are just due to the pressure of maybe Jamal Williams playing awfully well. So it's got to be a combination of two things. Williams is going to have to show that the promise that he had as a pass protector at BYU translates to him acclimating to the Green Bay offense and being able to pick up assignments well and execute them well. And if he does that, and he runs like he's capable of, you know, because he's a shifty runner who understands how to finish strong. He's run in every type of blocking scheme that you can imagine since high school. So he's a versatile player. He reminds me in style, not in talent, but he reminds me in style of Ricky Waters. He's that kind of guy who can really give you, he may not be that great breakaway threat, but he's got more burst. He's got more change of direction speed than maybe what he's credited for. And I think that when you combine that with his after contact skill, you have a smart athletic runner who can get it done and move the chains and give you some big plays. And if he does all those things well right out the gate and Montgomery struggles again in pass pro or starts putting the ball on the ground, then you might see that the effects of pressure there. But to me, the odds of that happening are still fairly low. I'd say that, you know, Montgomery still probably has an 85% chance of starting this year and being the guy.
Matt, you liked Aaron Jones, though, too, didn't you?
I did, an awful lot. And, you know, he's probably one of the best receiving backs of this draft class in terms of some of the things that he can do contested, you know, in contested situations, making plays downfield. And he's also a smart runner between the tackles. I think that he's a good one between the tackles. I think pass pros where he has to get stronger. And also just, you know, that to me is probably going to be the biggest separation between those three backs.
Matt, last year we did an entire show on your outliers, players that you had ranked quite differently than the consensus or others in the community. We're just going to do a couple of players today, but you've already mentioned Josh Reynolds. I think you have him as your wide receiver 4, at least in your post-draft RSP. I know things can change and maybe have changed since then. But tell us what you like about Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, there is one. We talked about that earlier, you know, at some point before our show, just talking back and forth about things that have changed. Maybe Cooper Kupp has moved up my rankings a fair bit as a guy that has changed some. And I liked him pre-draft more than I did right out of the gate post-draft. But some of that has to do with Kupp being able to move around the formation a little bit more. And, you know, but I've always liked his quickness. His quickness is really on par with Allen Robinson. He just doesn't have Robinson's size and he doesn't have Robinson's deep speed, but he runs good routes and he's very good off press coverage. One of the better I've seen. Reynolds, I think, is better off press coverage than has been reported. I love his ability to adjust the ball in the air. And I think that he's a good player after the catch in terms of either making the first guy miss or bouncing off hits. So he's a fairly physical player. And while he's only played one of the three wide receiver positions that we most commonly think about in fantasy, and that's limiting him maybe right off the bat, I don't think there's much in his way towards becoming that big play guy. And the jump between year one and year two, I think, could be pretty substantial for him. The big question is, can they find a quarterback? You know, is he on their roster, or are they looking to next year?
And what about Chad Kelly? We had your buddy Sigmund Bloom on several weeks ago, and he was singing the praises of Kelly as well. So I know you football guys are step in step there. You've got Kelly as your quarterback too.
To me, quarterback in dynasty, I like to trade for established guys. That's just the way that I like to do it, because all the factors that, you know, Williamson asked about and talked about earlier, that's probably why I don't tend to draft quarterbacks very often. If I do, they're late, mid to late round guys, or they're undervalued, in my opinion, by a great deal. And Kelly, to me, is a guy that I can get much later and take the chance on, because I love the talent. And to me, quarterbacking is kind of graded on three levels for me. It's, you've got the academic component of reading coverages and understanding, you know, the X and O's of the game. You have the technique and athletic ability. You know, I'd say technique and strategy are kind of the academic part. You have the physical part, arm strength, athletic ability. And then you have the kind of the emotional IQ part, the creativity part, the intuitive part. Understanding, you know, Alex Smith may process the game really well in terms of understanding things, but in terms of processing it quickly and knowing how to be aggressive at the right moment without hesitating, that's where he struggles. And you see that the difference between the best quarterbacks in football and the quarterbacks who are starters that you know, fans would like to see, you know, gone, but they're like, we can live with them another year, are guys who, when they see that opening, they have to hesitate one to two more beats. And when they do, they throw the interception, and that's the end of the game. And it's the difference between them having a 300-yard day and three touchdowns and a 250-yard day and two interceptions, you know. And it's, and I think that Kelly's that kind of guy who doesn't hesitate. He plays creatively. He's a terrific athlete in terms of, you know, he was a dual threat coming to Clemson. And I mean, I remember watching some tape with him, and I showed this. I did a film room with Bloom, and I wanted to introduce him to Kelly because I knew that Bloom likes the flashy guys. He loves the athletes, you know. And I wanted to show him tape of Chad Kelly beating some Georgia cornerbacks on like a 40-yard run where the cornerback had an angle on him, you know, and just wanted to show that in addition to that, he was a decisive passer who just made it look easy. And to me, Kelly is kind of, you know, if you're our age, then you probably watched Tom Cruise movies in the 1980s. And if you're not, then maybe you can say you're either fortunate or not. Depends on what your taste is. But, you know, Chad Kelly to me is like the quintessential Tom Cruise 80s movie. He's the precocious
Maverick
talent. Yeah, he's Maverick. He's totally. He's a mature talent. Yeah. He kind of even looks like him. You know, his family member relative was like this, you know, unbelievable legend of a talent. And he's chasing that ghost, and he keeps, you know, being self-destructive, and he finally gets a last chance. And that last chance is, of course, from another legend who knew his father, or in this case, his uncle. So, I mean, it's just to me, Kelly is a guy that he's a low end investment with a high return. And in dynasty leagues, I love that, especially a quarterback where I just choose to go for guys that are proven and have 5, 6, 7 years left, hopefully.
All right. Well, we talked about this at the top of the show, and let's go ahead and get into our top 10 rookie rankings. We're just going to take turns sharing those and revealing those. And we have, we've talked about some of these players probably already, and we can continue to do that, but Matt Waldman, we'll let you get started. Who is your number one rookie for dynasty purposes right now?
Right now, it's been Christian McCaffrey, and I'm still feeling that way, even though I think Matt's provided a very good counterpoint otherwise.
All right, Williamson, what about you?
I'm taking Corey Davis slightly, you know, not by leaps and bounds. I think this time next year, we're going to be talking him about on par with like an Amari Cooper. I think Mariota's the NFL's next great elite quarterback. I love the situation.
Yeah, I'm taking Davis as well. For me, it's really about just favoring the wide receiver when it's close. The depth of the running back class this year, not only at the top, but later in the first round, in the second round, that pushes me even more to Davis, I think. Waldman, who's your number two guy?
My number two guy is Davis, and I love him. And I kind of saw kind of a mix of Hakeem Nicks and an old school Antonio Bryant when Antonio Bryant was lighting things up at Pittsburgh in terms of ability, just a smooth physical player. And I agree that he's in an offense where even if I don't think Mariota becomes the guy who supports three or even four wide receivers because of the scheme, Davis is going to be their primary guy. And he's just the guy that, from what I heard from a scout, he's the guy they targeted because they believe that he fits their locker room perfectly. And he's a worker.
It's going to be fun to watch Mariota and Davis for the next 5 or 10 years. Williamson, number two for you.
Love the AB reference, by the way, Waldman. My first year at Pitt was Bryant's last year at Pitt. He was a stud. He had just won the Biletnikoff. So yeah, he was a stud. A little crazy, but he was a stud. Fournette's my two. I just think that that's a good line. He's going to score a lot of touchdowns. He's going to be the foundation of that offense with or without Bortles in the future. Good defense, a lot of favorable scripts with a lot of talent.
And Matt, we've been hanging around too long. Fournette is also my number two. He's really close with these other two running backs that we'll get to. But for now, draft capital, even though there's not a ton of difference with he and McCaffrey, I give him the edge. Waldman, number three.
Fournette's my number three. So, right. You know, you look at that and my questions, to me, the running backs are all my first 5 to 6 running backs are really very tightly knit in terms of rankings. And when I look at Fournette, there's a little boom bust element to me with him, or there was, which was, are they going to use a fullback? Looks like they are. So that's good. Are they going to run him more out of shotgun sets than I'd like to see? Are they going to ask him to do more zone running or more gap running? And I think all signs are pointing to that they know how they want to use him and they understand what he does best. And I think when you give this big old cement truck a runway and say, don't make any tight hairpin turns until you get through the line, which is what gap Scott, you know, style scheme is essentially about. He's great at that. And he's always been a better receiver than people often talked about. You look at his high school tape, and he's a phenomenal receiver, and they're thrown to him a lot in camp, so I like it.
All right, Matt, number three.
Joe Mixon, yeah. Again, do-it-all guy. Should get goal line touches, should get carries, should get receptions, a stud. I hate their O-line, though.
Yeah, I have him number three as well. Just really close. Again, Fournette, Mixon, and McCaffrey, all very close for me. Waldman, number four.
Joe Mixon, and very similar reasons as Williamson. I really don't have anything more to add.
All right, Matt.
Then I have McCaffrey. You know, I mean, not a big shocker there. I think I see a little bit more of a gap between Fournette, Mixon, then McCaffrey, than you guys, obviously. But, I mean, I would have any hesitation taking him at 1-4.
Yeah, McCaffrey's my four as well. So, in slightly different order, all three of us have Davis, Fournette, Mixon, and McCaffrey in that top four. And I still think – I think it's been this way really from post-draft on as training camps begin to open – that's kind of the top tier. There's a bit of a drop after the top four, at least according to most and based on most of the dynasty leagues that I've been participating in and following. Mr. Waldman, number five, who is it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for right now, it's very tight, but I would say that I still have Samaje Perine as my number five guy, even though that's probably higher than many. And that may be a shocker over Dalvin Cook. They're neck and neck. I just like Perine's ball security a little bit more. I think that, you know, he fits what Washington has been trying to do for a while. It may take him a little longer to get up to speed than what Cook will do. But I also think that Perine has less risk in terms of on and off the field. I don't talk a lot about off the field stuff, but, you know, Cook's track record off the field you know, it may not be as what Mixon's was in terms of, you know, that one huge incident that has made him a polarizing figure. Dalvin Cook is a guy that's had a lot of issues, and you wonder if he's learned, and that's the thing that I'm kind of concerned about. But P. Ryan, you know, good citizen, strong back. I think his burst is enough. Ryan Riddle, former NFL player, and I did a film remember and watched him and saw that he was a guy who earlier in his career had that burst. As he gained a little bit more weight, played with some injury, he seemed a little slower. He lost some of that weight before the combine. I feel good about his landing spot.
Yeah, and it's that landing spot that has seen him gain some dynasty value following the draft. I'm not sure what his rank was as far as running backs coming off the board, but I know he fell a little bit further than other guys you'll see in the first round of rookie drafts. But that landing spot, it was just almost perfect for him. Williamson, number 5 for you.
Yeah, I thought P. Ryan would be – I would have him the highest on my list. I have Cook and then P. Ryan. I don't have a whole lot to add. Although I looked at Cook's landing spot as a positive. I mean, off the field, I think it's harder to get in trouble in Minnesota than it is Miami or somewhere like that. But I do think their offensive line has to be improved, and I think vastly improved, up to, you know, to the point where it's at least – allows the offense to function, which isn't the case last year. I have no faith at all in Latavius Murray. I think Cook will go past him in a heartbeat. I think his offense has a chance to be pretty good, and that he should be the feature guy soon. So I go McCaffrey, Cook, P. Ryan.
All right, and I have Cook 5 as well. I agree with you regarding the competition there. I mean, I think I read that McKinnon and Murray are actually both banged up already early in camp. So to me, that's Cook's job to take and run with. Waldman, number 6.
Yeah, Cook's my 6th guy. And, you know, just adding to that is, you know, from a redraft standpoint, you know, I have Cook probably Mixon and Cook as my top 2 guys in redraft right now. But in Dynasty, I just am a little bit more concerned about that long term. But then again, you know, Rick Spielman, I mean, you look at him as a general manager, and I don't know, the sense I get is that, you know, they probably checked him out fairly well enough that they feel comfortable about what they're getting out of him. And he is a worker, and he's a very good receiver out of the backfield. So I don't blame anybody for taking Cook 5th or even higher.
All right, Matt, you already said you had P. Ryan number 6.
Yeah, and I have one quick question for Matt on P. Ryan. Do you think he gets higher on NFL draft? Do you think he goes higher on NFL draft day if Joe Mixon doesn't exist?
Yes. I absolutely do think that's what happened. I mean, Mixon has some otherworldly potential, and I think that's really the limiter.
All right, number 6 for me is a tough one. I've still got Mike Williams there. We all know about the current injury he's dealing with, and of course, there's even been rumors and reports that could cost him the season. If I'm doing a rookie draft today, honestly, I don't know if I'm taking him 6, but it's hard based on what we know right now to move him down any further, especially based on what we know the Chargers spin on him with that top 10 pick. So I've got Williams 6. Really interested to see where you guys end up ranking him. Matt, your number 7 player.
I have another Williams, but it's Jamal out of Green Bay. And I like his skills, and I talked about him enough that I feel like that even down the stretch, 1 to 2 years from now, I think he'll have that starting job, and I think that he'll be the guy to be looking out for. Now, the fear is this is an Aaron Rodgers offense. The Green Bay offensive line, as Matt Williamson has talked about, you know, in his articles, hasn't been very good. So, you know, there's some things that need to be worked on there, and it's a shaky 7, and that's why he's not as high up on my board as, say, that McCaffrey, Fournette, Mixon, P. Ryan, Cook tandem. But Williams is a guy that I definitely just feel good about what he can do for a team overall. And I know and some of it may be personal bias. I've gotten a chance to know a little bit more about him, talked with his trainer a good bit. And I just feel like that this is a guy that understands what it's going to take to be a professional. And I just think those guys tend to do well.
So it sounds like there's a little bit of a gap or a teardrop between 6 and 7 for you. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Williamson, number 7.
Yeah, I'm Mike Williams here. I didn't love the player coming out of school. I don't love the landing spot. I don't love the back situation. I just didn't love anybody else.
All right. Number seven for me, I actually thought you might have this guy next, Williamson. I've got Alvin Kamara, another player who's seen a big boost in value from his landing spot with the Saints. I can't wait to see what he can do. I think he's just locked in for a PPR role with the Saints. Waldman, number eight.
This starts a tier of tight ends. And if you're in a PPR league, then I like to have tight ends as one of those anchors that you build around because they tend to have long careers. And if you find the guys who have that elite ability after the catch and who can win the ball in the air, then you end up with someone who can give you long-term stability, and that allows you to cycle through running back and wide receiver. So with that said, OJ Howard narrowly is at the top of my list. And again, I've had some concerns about, you know, that I talked about earlier with him in terms of him being maybe that superstar type of player, but I think he's solid enough in terms of what he can do that he'll deliver strong production at worst as a mid-tier for a long time.
All right. And Williamson, number eight.
I have Kamara next. And for basically all the reasons you said, I could see him being their leading ground or total yardage leader in 18. You know, if Peterson moves on or Ingram falls out of favor, it seems like he always is out of favor. I kind of see him as a souped up Pierre Thomas for them.
All right. And my number eight player is one that I've moved up recently. I guess the more I hear about him, the more I read about him, and looking forward to watching him in camp, the more I'm buying in. Kareem Hunt, the Chiefs running back. I'm not sold on Ware by any means. I think he's kind of just a guy, definitely for fantasy purposes, and I think we could see Hunt in that starting role by midseason. Mr. Waldman, number nine. We're almost done.
Yeah, a guy I'd say that has moved up my board is Evan Ingram. I just feel like that you look at a guy with 4.4 speed, he's more receiver than tight end. Tight ends are tough to transition early on, but he's making plays all over camp. They're moving him around the formation a lot, using him in different positions where he's really a big wide receiver, a big slot guy right now. And if he fails upward as a tight end, I think he's going to fail upward and replace Brandon Marshall in a couple of years. And that just means if they keep Odell Beckham, which I don't see how they wouldn't, then you're going to get him opposite Odell Beckham. I love that. 4.4 guy, good hands, makes plays above the rim, hard to bring down after the catch. Give me some of that.
All right, number nine, Williamson.
I have Hunt. I just think he's probably going to be the starter at some point. I don't love him. I don't think he's a great athlete. I don't think he's got a super high ceiling, but it's a pretty decent situation.
All right, and my number nine, I know I'm out here on this limb on my own. I've still got some juju love. I don't know. I don't have high expectations for short term with that stacked receiving core, but I still do. I like the landing spot. I love that they've been able just to find wide receivers in those mid rounds in the past years. And I guess maybe the concern with him is Ben as well. What's going to happen with him? Is this retirement talk real or not? That's kind of my reach. That I don't know, my guilty pleasure rookie reach is Juju Smith-Schuster. All right, last one, Waldman, your 10th ranked rookie currently.
You know, I'd love to elevate Cooper Kupp into that spot, but there's so many other guys that I, including Juju, Chris Godwin, a bunch of guys that I like, but I'm still going to stick with a tight end here and say David Njoku, however you pronounce his last name. He is a guy that I really like the change of direction. I like his skill to make some of those big boy plays on above the rim in tight coverage. He's done that a lot. He's got a good track record for that as a tight end. And it's just a matter of him learning. It may take a couple of years for him to do in the same way it took a couple of years for Travis Kelce. But I think he has those types of skills. And I think that the Browns, with that offensive line improving, they need better wide receivers than they have. I think this guy is going to become a safety blanket. And I wouldn't be surprised if DeShone Kizer gets a year or two opportunity to prove his worth and ends up establishing a strong connection with the tight end.
So having those three tight ends, Matt, in that 8, 9, 10 spot for you, do you have any – and this is something we've talked about a lot on here over the past couple months. Do you have any concern with using a first round rookie pick in Dynasty on a tight end, given the typical time it takes them to transition and be productive fantasy players in the NFL?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it depends on your outlook. If you're a person who's trying to win now, then you don't want to do that, because it's just, you're focusing on high impact guys, running back, wide receiver. And that those are the positions you're probably going to want to take. But if you're building a little bit more long-term, you're rehabbing your team, and you know that you don't have the talent right away to even contend, then I would look at tight end at that spot, because you're solidifying it for a long enough period of time that now you're just, you're giving yourself, you know, after, if you hit on Howard, Njoku, or Ingram, and to me, it's rare that I would recommend guys that highly, but I like their talents. So if you hit on one of those guys, I feel like you're going to get a guy for, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 dynasty windows of 2 to 3 years, who's going to deliver you that production that you just don't have to worry about. You don't have to cycle through 3 to 4 picks to get a tight end anymore, because you got the guy, and then you can focus solely on those high impact positions that everyone else looks at.
So you see those, you see all three of those guys as potential top 5, top 10 fantasy tight ends for years to come, it sounds like. Yeah,
I do. That's how I feel about this class. I think that Howard's the best football player all around, but he's just narrowly ahead because I think of fit and quarterback that he has. But I think that Njoku and Ingram may even have more upside as receivers. It just depends on how their quarterback and offense shake out long term, with Manning getting older, the offensive line not being great, and Njoku being in a situation with Cleveland where are they finally stabilizing, or are we looking at another, you know, 3 to 5 years of, you know, what they've been doing?
All right, Matt Williamson, your final player in the top 10?
Yeah, for my top 10 list, I just had TE here. I just had tight end. Kind of the same respect that Matt's been saying. I would go 1, 2, 3 in a row tight end at this point. I think I would go Ingram, Howard, Njoku, but I could really make a strong point for all of them. I think Njoku might even have the highest ceiling. And my last question for Matt is those three versus Hunter Henry, knowing what you know right now about Henry.
I'd still take those three because while Henry's getting schemed very well and he's a good route runner, I still don't think he's a great blocker. And Rivers is nearing the end. So, you know, are they going to find the right guy to really exploit him? Is he going to, you know, I think Henry's going to be, to me, that top 5 to 7 guy, kind of an Ertz type of player who can give you good stuff, but everyone's going to be waiting for him to be a top 5 guy every year, and I just don't see that.
My 10th ranked player, again, kind of in line with you, Matt Williamson, I have Ingram there, and if we were doing a top 12, it would be Ingram, Njoku, and Howard for me. So it sounds like we're all kind of in agreement on those tight ends in that late first round range. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today, and just tell our listeners where they can find your work, especially where they can find and purchase the RSP.
Sure. I write over at Football Guys along with the great Matt Williamson over here. And I also, you can find me at mattwaldmanrsp.com. And that's my site where I do a lot of YouTube film room breakdowns, and you can check out my film rooms at the channel, the RSP Film Room. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's always fun talking football with y'all.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for joining us. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.